My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
My name is Mr. Hellbrook, and I've been teaching for more than 15 years. Long enough to know that kids are kids, no matter where you go. Noisy, rowdy, and inventive in ways that adults forget how to be. But last fall, I moved north to a smaller district. I found myself in charge of a class where the children weren't like any I'd taught before. They weren't bad by any stretch, just different. Wary, perhaps. They could scream their lungs out over dodgeball 1 minute, then fall into eerie silence the next. It was during one of those silences that I noticed their game. At first, I thought it was just a variation on tag or some regional playground chant like Duck Duck Goose. They formed a loose circle, walking slowly around a chosen child, and began chanting. It wasn't a rhyme I recognized, just the cadence of names. All the while, the one in the middle baited, teased, tricked the others into speaking their own name, and whoever slipped became it. That much I could follow. The rules weren't the strange part. What unsettled me was how serious they treated it. The game always began the same way. Voices hushed, steps measured, a kind of nervous reverence. The playground could be roaring with sounds, and still, when that circle formed, the noise dimmed as if some unspoken boundary had dropped around them. And whoever was chosen as it never looked like they were playing. They didn't laugh or roll their eyes or chase after friends. They slumped, shoulders heavy, eyes downcast. More than once, I saw tears. I told myself it was just part of the act, a way of making the role less desirable. Kids invent these things, loser rules, penalties, all to add stakes. Still, it left a sour taste in my mouth. Sometimes they tried it on me. "Come on, what's your first name, Mr. Hellbrook?" They'd sing-song, grinning as though they might trick me. "Just your first name, just once." But I'd been around long enough to keep that line firm. Teachers who gave away too much too quickly always regretted it. So I'd smile, shake my head, and repeat the rule I'd carried my whole career. "I'm Mr. Hellbrook to you, nothing more." The attempts never went anywhere. They'd shrug, laugh it off, and return to their circle, whispering among themselves. I might have ignored it altogether if it weren't for what happened that Tuesday. It had been a difficult week already. Grey skies, restless kids, and too much pent-up energy. During recess, I spotted them forming the circle again. This time, the child in the center was Noah, a boy I knew well. He'd been having trouble at home. Frequent absences, a father in and out of the picture, a mother working two jobs to keep the lights on. I'd spent extra time with him in class, coaxing him into reading out loud, praising every small victory. And now, here he was. It. The other kids circled him, voices low and insistent. Noah's head hung, His hands knotted into fists. He wasn't just sulking. I could see it in his face. The pale tightness around his mouth, the tremor in his shoulders. He looked hollow, like someone had scooped out his insides and left him with nothing but fear. My gut clenched. I'd seen plenty of kids pout over losing games, but this wasn't pouting. It was despair. And when I took a step closer, I swore I saw his lips moving, whispering something under his breath. Not to the others or to himself, to something else. It all looked too much. When the bell rang, I caught Noah before he could slip back into the tide of students. He dragged his feet, shoulders slumped, trying to avoid my eye. "Walk with me," I said, steering him toward the bench by the fence. He sat reluctantly, clutching the straps of his backpack like a shield. "You seemed upset out there," I began gently. "The game, it didn't look fun to you." Noah hunched further, eyes fixed on the gravel. "It's just a game." "Doesn't have to be," I said. "If the other kids are giving you trouble, I can step in. No one should have to make you feel like that." That got a flicker. His eyes darted up, then away again. "You don't understand." "Then help me. I can't fix what I don't know." Silence stretched between us. I waited. Years in classrooms had taught me patience, but also the look of a kid holding back something important. Finally, he shook his head. "It's not trouble, it's the rules." "What rules?" He pressed his lips tighter. When I leaned forward, he whispered, almost inaudible, "We can't tell. If we tell, you join the game." I frowned. "You can tell me. I won't let the others know." No answer. He hunched lower, curling into himself. His face looked older than 10 years should, drawn and wary. It was like I was talking to someone who'd already seen too much. I tried another angle. "Noah, you're a smart kid. You know games are supposed to be fun, but when you play this one, you look like you're carrying the world on your back. That's not fun. That's..." I stopped myself before saying something wrong. "That's heavy, and I don't like seeing you sad." He shook his head again. "You can't help." Something in his tone hit me harder than I expected, a resignation no child should carry. For the rest of the morning, I couldn't shake it. I kept glancing at him while teaching fractions, watching his pencil move half-heartedly across the page, his eyes clouded with something I couldn't name. At lunch, I tried again, this time with a whole class. I leaned against the edge of my desk while they opened lunchboxes and chattered. "So," I said casually, "that game you all like to play, the name one, what's it about?" Silence spread across the classroom like ink in water. Conversations died mid-sentence. Even the kids who were usually loudest stared down at their food. "It's just a game," one muttered. "Looks a little more serious than that." No one answered. I scanned the faces. Tense. Every one of them avoiding my eyes. Then a girl at the back, brave or careless, spoke without looking up. "If you don't pass it on, it stays." The room went rigid. A few kids hissed at her, shushing. She stuffed a cracker into her mouth and refused to say more. I raised my eyebrows, trying to make light of it. "Pass what on?" The silence was total. I let it drop, not wanting to spook them further. of the words echoed in my mind all afternoon. If you don't pass it on, it stays. I found myself glancing at Noah again and again. His face was pale, drawn, his movements sluggish. It wasn't the look of a kid being teased. It was the look of someone bearing something he couldn't put down. By the final bell, my decision was made. I'd never joined their games before, never blurred the line between Mr. Halbrook and the children. But seeing Noah like that, knowing he carried something he believed he couldn't share, it gnawed at me. If joining their game gave me an angle to help these kids, it was worth loosening up a bit. So the next day, at recess, when the circle formed and the chanting began, I stepped closer. Noah's eyes widened when I knelt beside him. "Tell you what," I said softly, "how about I play this time?" The kids froze mid-step, their faces pale as snow. The circle went still, 20 children frozen in place, eyes locked on me as though I'd broken some unspoken law. "Teachers don't play," one of the girls whispered. "Why not?" I asked, keeping my tone gentle, playful. "Seems like fun. Maybe I'll be better at it than you think." Noah's lips parted, his face caught somewhere between fear and hope. For the first time all week, his shoulders seemed to ease. "You can," he murmured, "but you have to do it right." "And what's right?" I asked. His eyes flicked up to mine. "You have to say your full name." The words made the rest of the circle flinch. One boy hissed through his teeth, shaking his head. Another tugged at Noah's sleeve, urging him to stop. But Noah was insistent. "It doesn't count otherwise." I hesitated. 15 years in classroom had taught me the power of boundaries. My first name was one of them. I'd never given it, not even when begged or teased. It was a line between me and them, not to keep distance, but to keep authority. I was Mr. Halbrook, always. And yet, Noah was smiling now, faintly, the first real smile I'd seen from him in weeks. A fragile thing, but real. What harm could a name do? "All right," I said, lowering my voice so he could hear. "Just this once." I leaned in, whispered it, my full name. John Halbrook. The change was instant. The circle, which had been stiff and uncertain, erupted in motion. The children's voices rose in a sudden chant, names spilling into rhythm. They circled me, faces pale but eyes fixed, the words tumbling over each other in a frenzy. Noah staggered back, relief breaking across his face like dawn. He let out a sharp, almost joyful laugh before clapping both hands over his mouth. The colour returned to his cheeks, his eyes bright again, as though the invisible weight had slipped off his shoulders. They glanced at me, then at each other, then at Noah. Then I realised this wasn't the laughter of a shared joke. This was the laughter of release. I'd taken something from him, something he was glad to lose. By the time the bell rang, the game was over. The children scattered, shoving lunchboxes into backpacks, dashing toward the cafeteria. The chatter returned, loud and unbothered, as though the past half hour had never happened. All except Noah. He lingered, grinning sheepishly as he adjusted his straps. "Thanks, Mr. Halbrook," he whispered, then darted off after the others. For the rest of the afternoon, I rode that warmth. He was lighter, writer. He raised his hand twice during reading group and even volunteered to help collect papers. Seeing him unburdened made the unease worth it. Maybe the game really was just a strange playground ritual, and stepping into it had given him the break he needed. Maybe. That night, the doubts began. I was grading essays in the quiet of my apartment when I heard it first. Faint, indistinct. My pen paused mid-mark. Halbrook. I froze, listening. John Halbrook. It came from the kitchen. No, not from. Through. The way a draft moved through walls, whispered as though someone leaned close behind my ear, but with no breath, no body. I stood, heart pounding, checking every room. Nothing. Locked windows, bolted door, silence. Back at the desk, the papers were scattered, deliberately rearranged. My name was written across them in faint, uneven strokes, lettered again and again by invisible hands. I gathered them quickly and shoved them into a drawer, sat in the dark, pulse hammering. From the corner of the room, just beyond where the lamplight reached, came a whisper again. John Halbrook. I didn't sleep that night. Every time I closed my eyes, I heard it repeated, patient, endless, as though something had finally learned what it needed. The whispers didn't stop. Never loud, just present, slipping through the cracks of my apartment at night, curling under the hum of the refrigerator, murmuring from the dark corners of the bedroom. Always my full name. Patient, relentless. It wasn't violent, but it made everything feel wrong. At school, it followed me, interrupting my teachings on a semi-regular basis. The kids knew. When I stumbled through roll call, distracted, they exchanged looks. Whispers darted between them like sparks. He's it now. The collector's on him. The relief in Noah's face cut deeper than any accusation. He smiled in a way I'd never seen him smile before. Full and unburdened, he was light as air. That was when I understood. The game wasn't cruel, it wasn't bullying. It was survival. A ritual not to entertain, but to pass on the weight before it hollowed them out. And now, it was mine. By the third day, the headaches began. They weren't normal, just a constant pressure on the back of my skull, like someone pressing a hand there and never letting go. Sleep came in fragments, half an hour at a time, before the whispers snapped me awake. In the classroom, I caught myself muttering, not whole sentences, not lessons, just my own name. Over and over, lips moving soundlessly until I realized what I was doing. And every time I slipped, the room seemed to darken a fraction, as if something had leaned closer to hear. The children noticed before I admitted it to myself. At first, they were delighted. I stumbled over math drills, forgot spelling lists, let the schedule drift. My faltering control meant longer recesses, free periods, games spilling into lessons. The laughter rang down the halls, unburdened and wild. But joy only lasts so long when it curdles against fear. By the end of the week, my hands shook when I tried to write on the board. My eyes burned, heavy with exhaustion, black crescents blooming beneath them. Once, mid-sentence, I stopped cold, unable to remember what I just said. The silence stretched until one boy nervously supplied the answer himself. The laughter died. Now the whispers in the classroom weren't playful. They were anxious. I'd look up from grading and find 20 pairs of eyes watching me, wide and uncertain. Even Noah, freed from his burden, avoided my gaze. Relief lingered in his face, yes, but guilt too. The smile he'd carried had dimmed to something smaller, tighter. He knew what I carried now. By the time Friday came, I could barely hold the chalk. I leaned against the desk, the room spinning, words stumbling from my mouth in fragments. The children sat frozen, recess balls untouched, pencils idle in their hands. They weren't celebrating anymore. When the bell rang, they filed out slowly, whispering among themselves. I sat with my head in my hands, trying not to mutter my own name out loud. That was when I noticed the folded scrap of paper tucked beneath my notebook. Small, careful handwriting in pencil. Don't keep it too long. It hurts. My chest tightened. No signature. Just the warning. By the second week, I started to consider it. The thought crept in during roll call. I read the names in order. Carter, Diaz, Huang. Each child answering, "Here," without hesitation. But what if I pushed harder? I imagined pausing over a student's name, pretending to mispronounce it, then frowning until they corrected me. Not just their first name, but the whole thing, drawn out for clarity. Their full name. The game would recognize it. The collector would shift to them. I pictured it again during written work. I could hand back papers, insisting on formality. "Read your name for me. All of it." A teacher's request. They wouldn't question it. The burden would fall, just like it always did in the game. The images made me sick, but they clung to me anyway. But when I glanced up, I saw their faces. Not mischievous now or playful. Concerned, eyes darting to my shaking hands, my ashen skin, the way I stumbled through lessons. Their worry hit me harder than the whispers ever could. I dropped the papers, voice rough. "Go on, recess." They scattered, too quickly, their relief obvious. And in the sudden quiet, I heard a murmur at the window, carried on no wind. A girl lingered, fiddling with her sleeve. She didn't meet my eyes when she said, "You're not supposed to keep it. It's worse if you do." "Worse how?" I asked, my voice cracking. She only shook her head. "We don't know. Nobody ever lasts this long." That night, I lay awake, staring at the ceiling. The whispers filled every shadow, pressing against my ears, my throat, the corners of the room. For the first time, I thought of outsiders. Another teacher, a clerk at the grocery store, my sister if I called her. Anyone, someone who could take it, someone who wouldn't know how it worked. But the thought collapsed in on itself almost as soon as it formed. They didn't know the rules. They wouldn't understand the game, wouldn't know how to pass it on. What if they kept it forever? What if they broke under it? And worse, they'd know who had given it to them. I pressed my palms into my eyes until I saw sparks. My own whispering lips brushed the silence. My name, again and again, unbidden. From the corner of the room, the collector stirred. I couldn't see it, not directly, but I felt it, leaning closer, listening. I clenched my jaw against the truth. The longer I held it, the more I knew. I was treading into a place no child had survived. It didn't take weeks for things to get worse, just days. The headaches deepened into nausea, my hands trembling so badly I had to steady the chalk with both. The kids stopped laughing at my mistakes. Their eyes followed me now with a kind of fearful pity. And then, I began to see it. At first, only in the corners of my vision, something pale and bent, watching from the far end of the hall. Each time I turned, it was gone. A trick of exhaustion, I told myself, nerves frayed too thin. But by Thursday, it no longer waited in the periphery. In the middle of a spelling exercise, I glanced at the back of the classroom and froze. It was standing between the last row of desks. Too tall, its shoulders brushing the ceiling, a body too thin for its height, limbs bent at angles that suggested too many joints. Where a face should have been was only a hollow, black and glistening, as if something had hollowed it out from within. The worst part wasn't the sight. The worst part was that the children didn't react. Their pencils scratched quietly on the page, as if nothing loomed above them, as if I was the only one who could see it. My throat closed. A sound tried to climb out, my name whispered against my will. But I bit down so hard, my teeth rattled. The figure tilted its head, the void where its face should have been rippling, stretching. I staggered against the desk. "Mr. Hellbrook?" one of the girls asked, voice tiny. The room had gone silent. 20 pencils stilled mid-word. 20 faces turned toward me, wide-eyed and afraid. And in that silence, I thought, better me than them. Because if I can pass it on, if one of these children slipped and saw what I had just seen, it would carve them hollow. It would break them. I couldn't do that, not to them. My vision blurred, the classroom tilted. For one awful moment, I thought I might crumple to the floor in front of them, let it take me then and there. But the whispering faded, just enough for me to steady myself. I clutched the edge of the desk until my knuckles whitened. The children didn't move. They knew what was happening, and they knew I hadn't passed it on. No one spoke as I gathered the chalk again, my hand shaking so hard the word I wrote was illegible. And then, in the middle of the next sentence, everything went black. Just for a breath, a blink, but long enough that when I opened my eyes, 20 children were staring at me in perfect silence. They knew I was breaking. The classroom emptied in a rush of coats and backpacks, the chatter fading down the hall. I stayed at my desk, staring at the blank board, the chalk still trembling in my hand. My body felt like wet paper, thin, tearing under its own weight. I almost didn't notice her. A quiet girl, small for her age, stood by the doorway, twisting the strap of her bag. When I looked up, she met my eyes with a steadiness that startled me. Not fear or mischief, something older. "You can't hold it forever," she said softly. The words froze me in place. Before I could respond, she stepped into the room. "Play with me." My stomach dropped. "No," my voice cracked, harsher than I intended. "Absolutely not." But she didn't move. Her eyes stayed locked on mine. "You'll break. You already are. It's not supposed to stay with one person this long." I shook my head, heat prickling behind my eyes. "You don't know what it's like," I whispered. "You don't know what I've seen." Her voice didn't waver. I know enough. We all do. The silence between us stretched. I thought of Noah's relief, the way his shoulders had lifted the instant I joined the game. I thought of the note slipped under my papers. Don't keep it too long. It hurts. And I knew she was right. Still, the thought of handing that weight back to a child tore at me. I gripped the edge of the desk, fighting the words. You're just a kid. She gave a small, almost sad smile. So are all of us. We didn't gather the whole class, just the two of us, a small circle in the quiet of the empty room. She stood across from me, hands clasped in front of her, eyes calm. I tried to stall, to explain, to beg her not to do it, but she only shook her head. This is how it works. You know it. We all do. The chant began. I stumbled through it, my voice hoarse, broken. She answered, as the children always did, steady, unafraid. And then she slipped, deliberately. She said her own name aloud, clear and sharp, eyes never leaving mine. The moment the word left her mouth, I felt it. The weight vanished, the pressure in my skull, the whispers in the corners, the sick dread that clung to me like damp clothes. Gone. Just gone. For the first time in weeks, I felt light, clear, alive. My breath came free and easy, my hands stilled, the silence in the room was clean. I almost collapsed with relief. She smiled faintly, but sadness never leaving her face. See? Better. My throat closed. You shouldn't have. It's okay, she interrupted. Her voice was calm, certain. We all take turns. Before I could answer, the rest of the class had gathered in the doorway, drawn back by instinct. They didn't cheer or laugh. They simply surrounded her, solemn, quiet, their eyes filled with understanding that ran far too deep for children their age. I looked at her again. Her shoulders had slumped. The same weight I'd carried was settling onto her. I could see it in the way her smile trembled, in the faint glassiness creeping into her eyes. The collector was with her now. I didn't hear it, not anymore, but I knew. The guilt hit me like a wave. I wanted to take it back, to hold it forever, if it meant she wouldn't have to see what I had seen. But she only stood a little straighter, nodded once, and whispered, "It's lighter now, for everyone." By the following week, the rhythm of the schoolyard had returned. From my classroom window, I watched them form their circle, feet crunching in the gravel, voices rising in their strange chant. A name slipped, laughter flared, and the burden shifted. The game carried on as it always had. But I understood now. It wasn't cruel, it wasn't bullying. It was survival. The collector was too heavy for one child to bear forever. Passing it on wasn't meanness, but mercy. They had all learned the rules, to never hold on too long, to never let it root too deeply. I walked among them during recess. They scattered around me, playing foursquare, trading cards, skipping rope. But always, in one corner of the yard, the circle formed. Always, the chant rose. And sometimes, I saw it go wrong. A child held it too long, their eyes dulled, their shoulders drooped. They slipped in lessons, grew withdrawn. The others pressed in, circling faster, trying to make the exchange happen. But the child resisted, clung to it out of fear or confusion. That was when I stepped in. Their voices rose, overlapping, tricking, teasing. And I let myself falter. I let the words slip, my own name on my tongue, clear and deliberate. The chant snapped shut around me. The air seemed to shift, heavy and sharp. I felt the weight settle back on my shoulders like a familiar cloak. The children watched and they moved on. As the circle broke apart, I stayed behind, shoulders bowed beneath an invisible weight, while the whispers returned, my name repeated in the hush between heartbeats, settling into me once more. And for the first time, I welcomed it.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.